The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley as we slide into a Thursday. Gary, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Let's get right to it, okay? Because we don't have enough. I mean, excuse me, we have too much for five
hours. Yeah, we
don't
have enough time.
We're not going to be able to get everything in.
Right.
First off, it's just a disclaimer I want to put here. I slept most of the day, I want you to know. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
I've been really scrambling. When you've got that long of testimony over that period of time, I've had to do a lot of reading and listening the last couple of hours. So,
right.
If I miss something, help me out. But
I watched most of it today. But you know, I mean, as with just about anybody watching it live, you're going to have most people are going to have distractions.
Yeah,
unless,
of course,
unless you're one of the DC area bars that opened up early.
Yes.
And then of course you have to order your drinks. Who's drinking at 10 a.m.?
Yeah,
wait, it's CC.
I've just been under the. In fact, I had it on for a little bit, and then I just said I need to turn it off because I just knew I needed to sleep because I've been under the weather. So I know you always do, and you do it willingly, and you enjoy doing it. Mm-hmm. But if I make any errors, please correct me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Let's just start out about just the general thoughts. I want to play just a couple of audio cuts to get to the point that I know that I want to make. Here's Michael Cohen yesterday, part of what he said.
All right.
I did things and I acted improperly at times at Mr. Trump's behest. I blindly followed his demands. My loyalty to Mr. Trump has cost me everything. My family's happiness, friendships, my law license, my company, my livelihood, my honor, my reputation, and soon my freedom.
Okay, then I want to play this cut from Michael Cohen yesterday. Here we go.
Donald Trump is a man who ran for office to make his brand great.
And, you know, that sums up, and we'll get to the point because the point is, when we examine anything, the way we look at it is you either believe everybody's lying on both sides or everybody's telling the truth, and then you look for the evidence. Most of the time, as a cynic I am, I look at every situation, and we've talked about this before, on Trump, on Russia collusion, whatever, assume everybody is lying. Where does the evidence bring you? But then there is a point where you are sitting as a juror, and you say, what statements make sense? What immediately comes out at you that may not be the substance of it, but give you an indication and say, I don't buy that.
Right.
And the part where he said, my blind loyalty to Donald Trump is what cost me everything.
Mm-hmm.
No, it did not. Your greed cost you everything.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I see somebody who is convicted of the number of crimes that he has committed that will most likely, you know, get him the 3 years in jail. We'll get him 3 years in jail. He's going, next month?
Yeah, May 6th, a couple of months away.
When somebody says, the reason I've lost everything is because I'm a good man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's what he's saying.
Yeah.
I lost everything because I have this blind loyalty. So it is actually my good character that has cost me everything.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I just said, you're not credible. And that's how I'm looking at it from how a juror would look at it. At that point, I said, you're not credible. You're not credible to me. You lost me right there because you're not credible.
Right.
And the other statement where he said Donald Trump ran for president to make his brand great. I don't think anybody who has paid any attention to Donald Trump, and I believe that we probably have more credibility saying this than other people who, you know, may have been absolutely loyal in the media to Donald Trump, no matter what, and no matter what he does, will say, oh, he's doing the right thing, and that's not us.
Mm-hmm.
But you cannot look at Donald Trump's life and not know and not understand, and knowing that he wrote the books that he wrote, that not only is he a business person, and you can make the case that he always said he surrounded himself with the best people. He didn't. He surrounded himself with a bunch of sleaze bags. Yeah, you can identify those, absolutely. But when you look at Trump, and you and I have talked about this for the longest time, Trump has been a policy guy and has been asked for over 35 years his opinions consistently about where this country is going and where the government is going. And he has been asked how many times, and he has written books about policy. You may disagree with the policy, but to say that he only ran because of the brand is bogus because of that. It's also bogus. It's a bogus statement to make that I don't think anybody who isn't a political hack on the left can buy, is that Trump isn't stupid. He knew that if he ran for president of the United States, half the people would hate him. Donald Trump knows that's not a good marketing place to be in. That's not a way to sell your brand, is to alienate half of the people, you know, in this country, because that's how you have to look at it as a business person. How many times have we said it to, whether it's Starbucks, whatever, don't get involved in politics, just sell coffee.
Right.
Don't alienate, one of the first rules of business, don't alienate half of your customer base. Trump's not stupid. He knew that. In fact, part of Cohen's testimony that we'll get into later on is based on the fact that Trump thought he was going to lose.
Yeah, right.
He didn't think he was going to win.
Mm-hmm.
So he knew that it was a huge negative as to what, you know, how it could affect his business even before he won.
Yeah.
And so I look at both of those statements and I say, those are two of the statements right there where I went, that's bogus. Now, the justifiable reason to absolutely impeach Trump. I have to do the silence there to see how everybody's reacting to that. The absolute evidence is the fact that he overinflated his wealth in order to try to buy the Buffalo Bills. Now, that's inexcusable.
Yeah, I've reached out to the NFL and issued my concern there because, how many times have you said it? Had he bought the Buffalo Bills,
yeah,
he wouldn't be president of the United States today.
Yeah, and I'm kidding. Someone's going to take me seriously on that one.
And the Bills wouldn't be in Buffalo either.
no, you're right. No, yeah. You're absolutely right.
But
that would have been if he would have gotten the Bills and as much as you know, as I've often said, I've been a lifelong Buffalo Bills fan.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knew that if he bought it, they'd most likely be in Toronto. Mm-hmm. That he was going to sit in a small market. There's no way he was going to do that.
Right. Yeah, and you know, going back to Cohen's testimony on the whole, you know, it was only going to help his brand. Actually, I could make the argument that for how many years he didn't run? How many times was he asked by people like Larry King, Oprah Winfrey?
Right.
Would you run for president? Are you going to run for president? I mean, that has been... Remember in 2004, right after the election, the Hillary thing started. Oh, no, I'm not going to run. Oh, no, I'm not going to run. And then, of course, the grassroots, it was all contrived. She was always going to run in 2008. That was going to happen. I mean, that had been planned, especially after Bush won a second term. Well, she was going to run. And so there had been the same kind of calling on Trump by people in the mainstream media, not conservatives, not Republicans, but people in the mainstream media, because they had him on almost like they do Warren Buffett. Nobody asked Buffett, you know, that question as often, at least as often mm-hmm. as they did with Trump. But you could make the argument that he decided not to run up until 2016 in order to protect his brand, knowing full well what would happen.
I think there's a stronger argument for that point of view.
Yeah.
And when he said that, I just went, when he, you know, both those statements, I went, number one, sorry, you're a convicted criminal and you're trying to say I'm a convicted criminal because of my good character, of my that loyalty, that character trait of loyalty is what, shut up.
Well, he basically spelled out how because the president went after family members and people close to him on social media, he was there to expose Trump. This is somebody who has no problem, zero loyalty. Stop with your loyalty. 10 years. You weren't forced to do that. You did it for the money.
Right. You're not forced to do anything.
You didn't do it out of because you're a good guy and you're loyal.
Right.
No, a good guy is loyal to his family and loyal to the law, loyal to the very spirit of practicing law, which means that if you've got a client that's doing something wrong and you know it, you need to help them correct that behavior, and then you need to usher them through paying the price for that behavior. But he decided he wanted to be the guy in all of this activity. And my question is, and he couldn't, it was asked several times, were you given directives? No, because he didn't work that way, but I knew what he wanted.
Right.
What does that mean?
I know.
No, what that means is you're the one who thinks that way. You're the one who took the lead on those. I'm not saying the president is not without fault. I'm not saying I can clear the president of anything. What I'm saying is he came to the table with very little and certainly very little new information, especially when it comes to the stuff with Stormy Daniels.
Very little new information, the check, but we'll get into the, because in all of the showbiz aspect of it and the political over-the-top stuff that happened, there were things of substance that came out of it. Mm-hmm. One of the things is that he was never told to lie about the Trump Tower.
Right.
Trump never told him to do that. Now, again, it's all depending on what you believe or what you don't believe. I'm just, again, throwing it out there and saying these are the, you know, discussion points. The other thing that he said is when he said that Trump wanted the payments, that he, you know, was lying to Melania. It was, and it's been brought up that that whole point takes it away from the campaign finance, that if you're doing it to keep it from your wife, if that's why you're doing it, then it's not about the campaign. Therefore, it's not a campaign finance violation or an in-kind donation to your campaign, which helps you. There was another reason for it. And he would be one of the major witnesses if there was a campaign finance crime. And he mentioned the president's main concern was making sure Melania didn't know. Yeah. Lying to Melania.
Right.
Again, we're not talking about a person's, we're talking about the criminal things here. When it comes to collusion, Russian collusion, he hurt the cause for the Democrats there.
You know, we made the point on the whole Stormy Daniels thing before. It was known, widely known or believed, that the president had affairs. Look at how many times he's been married.
Right.
So, and he knew what the public suspected, believed, or knew when he announced he was running for president. He's the, and Cohen brought this up, he's the guy, when talking about John McCain as a POW, said, I prefer the guys who don't get caught. The point being is, when it comes to his campaign, he threw out things that would normally, and he even brought up the whole thing, I could shoot somebody in the street and
yes, he did, yes.
you would right. still vote for me. that's actual proof that, or that goes to the theory or idea that the payment was about keeping it from the wife, really not keeping, not about protecting him as a candidate.
Right.
Because there were plenty of things that he did to himself or said that would be damaging to just about any other candidate. Yep. And I mean, would basically be the death knell of any of them, politically speaking.
We'll have more coming up here. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Hope we've learned some things here today. But Mr. Chairman, as I said earlier, your first big hearing, the first announced witness of the 116th Congress, is a gentleman who is going to prison in 2 months for lying to Congress. I don't think that's what we should be focused on.
The Republicans, Jim Jordan, yesterday. Now, where the president, when we look at the substance of what would have come out of this and not the over-the-top rhetoric that we heard yesterday, but where could Trump be vulnerable, possibly be vulnerable? You know, we had talked yesterday about when he's making the accusation that he was in the room when Roger Stone called and said, look, I talked to Julian Assange, and he said that he has, you know, I've confirmed with him that WikiLeaks has, you know, stuff on Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
And his response was, wouldn't that be great? Like, wouldn't that be great if that was the truth?
Mm-hmm.
And that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as you know, there's no evidence that Stone ever communicated with Julian Assange personally. There's no evidence to that. The only vulnerability would be in court, depending how, with Robert Mueller, in court, if he told Robert Mueller something else in the written answers that differ from that, but your only witness is a convicted liar.
Right. And you, how far do you want to go with that? Because you'd be talking about going after, you know, a sitting president. It's different than, and if he's brought before a grand jury on something like that. I mean, when you go back to Clinton, that was a different matter.
Well, I would take what he actually said in front of Congress, which the president said, wouldn't that be great?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't say, that's great, now let's go get it. He said, wouldn't that be great, as if that was true. So if they said, did you know? He goes, no, I didn't.
Right.
Well, they said, you know, that you heard him say it. And he said, and my response was, wouldn't that be great? I doubted that it was legit.
Right. Wouldn't.
Wouldn't. Right. And that's
right.
What, mm-hmm. that's again what Cohen said.
Right.
So at that point, I went, well, you can, you know, will that really go? Would that go anywhere?
Right.
Or would they simply say, well, you know, the lawyers say, look, we want to add to our answer to the special counsel here because of what Cohen said yesterday.
For Travel Centers of America, here's your forecast.
In the west, widespread heavy precipitation across central to northern California will continue most of the day. Lower elevation heavy rains, potential flooding possible across central to northern California, while very heavy snow measured in feet is likely through the Sierra and Southern Cascades. Heavy snows through portions of the northern Rockies from northwest Wyoming into central to far eastern Idaho could affect travel, with portions of I-94, I-90, I-15 north and south, and I-25 in Wyoming and Montana all affected. In the mid-Mississippi Valley, we'll see rain down through the Gulf Coast into the southeast. That wet weather expected along I-10, I-20, I-85, I-65, and I-75 out of Atlanta today. Watch for icing along I-44 from Oklahoma City to St. Louis. There's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE. We'll be right back.
making overnight radio great again. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. If you would like to get in, we would love to hear from you what you thought about the Cohen hearings yesterday. Also coming up, we will talk about the president in, just seems so strange to say it, the president in Vietnam. And
yeah.
We'll cover a little bit later on. He's supposed to have a press conference. You and I asking the question, should he cancel it? Because would any of the questions be on North Korea?
Right. It's unlikely you're going to have any questions on you. Well, from the international media, you might.
From the Vietnamese media,
right? Yes. But from the American media, well, and probably European media that might be there, you're definitely going to have nothing but Cohen questions. I mean, that probably is going to be the first question. Would be about Cohen. And so you, because it's in the middle of the night here in the States, do you just release a statement saying, listen, because of scheduling conflict, the president was not able to have a press conference. He will have one very soon after arriving back home in the States. But I don't know. I mean, the president's not afraid of the media. He never has been. You know, that might be out of any given political playbook, it might be the go-to play, but I don't know with this president. You could have somebody, I could see somebody come out, just somebody from the administration or staff come out, you know, to the podium and say the president's not going to make it, and the president walk out and go, no, that's okay, let's go ahead and do this. But we'll see where that goes. And if it does happen, I mean, it's likely that he's just going to go after Cohen, just like Cohen went after him. And
right.
And we suspected that a lot of the stuff that you were going to see on Wednesday was going to be claims and not backed up by anything. We knew that the checks were coming because copies of the checks were going to be presented because that had been out there. And then late in the day Tuesday and early Wednesday morning, we started getting copies of his opening statement, Cohen's statement. So we knew where this was going to go, and it was clear it was going to be about attacking his former boss.
Right. I already got this response. It shouldn't be about the right or the left. It should be about Trump's integrity. Well, that's what you may think, but what we believe it's about, and I believe what it is about, is getting to the truth.
Mm-hmm.
What is the actual?
Right.
What is the actual truth? What is actually going on here? I mean, this is the Democrats desperately trying to find a way, especially the far left, to impeach this president. That's what that's what they're trying to do.
Right.
Of everything, every day with every president, it is about the integrity of the president.
Mm-hmm.
But integrity itself doesn't get you impeached. Otherwise, Obama would have been impeached for lying to his own party.
Mm-hmm.
To the people that voted for him about their health care. So if it's about integrity, lies.
Yeah.
I mean, our goal is to get to the truth, but there's also the picture as what is going on here politically. What is the effort politically to do here? And yeah, it is about integrity across the board. It's about integrity of the Democrats going after a president for Russia collusion that every day keeps falling apart, that the president colluded with the Russians to hack the election. Look, has Trump done wrong things? Yeah. Has he done business with the wrong people? Has he hired the wrong people? Yeah. And that goes back to one of his campaign promises. I'll always hire the right people. Well, that's fallen apart.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he has hired some good people.
Yeah.
We've talked about it. We've talked about Bolton is a good person.
Mm-hmm.
He hires bad people. He hires good people.
Mm-hmm.
But he has hired bad people. Yes, you can make. He doesn't always hire the best people,
right?
And Cohen is an obvious example of that. But it's always about integrity across the board, about everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But I look at right now of everything that this president has done that has shown good character and bad character, and then I ask what compares to what we know, the accusations from the Democrats, because if you're looking at the integrity of the president, That's fine. What's the integrity of the Democrats? What's the integrity of the opposition party? What is the integrity of a party that has made the claim that the president colluded with the Russians to hack the actual election machines, which then evolved into hacking the DNC, which then evolved into trying to change the outcome of the election, as there continued to be no evidence to back up their claims whatsoever? What is the integrity of an FBI, of a Department of Justice, of the intelligence agencies to take bogus information to get a secret warrant to spy on the opposition campaign? People have said, you know, oh, Trump's paranoid at times. Well, sometimes the paranoia is justifiable.
Right.
Sometimes yeah. there are the rare circumstances where the paranoia is justifiable, and this is one of those times. Look, one of the narratives that's coming up right now, and I love this because even Bill Maher commented on it yesterday, this is how desperate they are. And Cohen ended up with this. I'm paraphrasing here, but I'm afraid if the president loses in 2020, he won't leave office. And this is going to cause a constitutional nightmare. And then Bill Maher jumped in it. But this has been a narrative like for the last week.
Right.
And what was beautiful about that, Cohen saying that at the end, after admitting that he met with the Democrats and Adam Schiff and everybody about what he was going to say when he testified. And it was like, that's one of the talking points that's coming from Adam Schiff and the Democrats, is that the president, we're afraid he's not going to. Well, where'd that come from? Did the president say that? That just magically appeared somewhere.
Right.
Well, our thing is, if the president, we're afraid that the president won't leave. What they're trying to do is continue the narrative that he believes he is a dictator, and there's no evidence to back that up at all.
Right.
So let's talk about, you want to talk about integrity? I can talk about integrity all day.
It was so funny because during the line of questioning by Debbie Wasserman Schultz, all of her stuff was about Russian collusion. Do you think it's possible? Those types of questions. Well, do you think that it's possible that potentially the president could or is capable of? And even Cohen in that moment was going, look, I don't know anything about. So he held it off for a couple of the questions. And then ultimately, you know, she asked this huge, broad question. Well, that's like asking if, do you believe any person is capable of committing murder? The answer to that question is yes, they are. Any given person on the planet is capable of committing murder. Why not just ask that one? Forget about the collusion thing. Do you believe you mentioned his comment about shooting people in the streets and still being able to still getting the votes and getting elected and winning.
Well,
and so let me ask you, do you believe he is capable of murder? Was this insane line of questions.
And then when you think it was Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Yes. Right.
Who the former head of the DNC, who did everything to ensure that it was not a fair primary season for Bernie Sanders, that did everything to direct and was relieved from her duties because of her effort to change the outcome of the Democratic primaries by not giving a fair shot to Bernie Sanders. She is asking questions to a convicted liar about whether Donald Trump had the potential to commit Russian collusion and change the outcome of the election, when we know that she was fired from her job because she attempted to do the exact same in the Democratic Party. Can't make this stuff up. Can't make this up.
And there's no disputing it.
Nobody's disputing it. There is no, well, do you think, Debbie? No, we know. That's why she's gone.
Yes. It was so, and that was.
Well, let's put a person of integrity in there to replace her,
right.
Donna Brazile.
Donna Brazile. Because she can do no wrong. Oh, wait.
Oops.
So as she starts her questioning, I had to be careful because that's exactly what was going through my mind. I'm talking to myself and I can't hear what she's saying. I'm thinking to myself, wait, focus, because it was just so overwhelming. The irony, the hypocrisy on display today.
But from that, again, I'm going to assume not a Trump fan. You wish to talk integrity? Let's talk integrity across the board. We're always willing to talk about that.
Sure.
The Democrats and liberals will not touch the integrity of their own party. They will not touch it. We'll hit both.
Sure.
We have no problem. We have no problem hitting it, but we have no problem talking about the truth. But don't write to me as if, oh, I'm all about fairness, because you're not. You only care about one side of the story.
Mm-hmm.
You actually don't care about the truth.
And that's why we had that spectacle on Wednesday.
And as we said, the truth stinks a hell of a lot more with the Democrats than it ever could come close to stinking with Trump at the moment.
Yeah.
From what we know right now, the major stink, the major rot in the government and the bureaucracies came from the Obama administration, the FBI, the Department of Justice, the intelligence agencies, other members of the Obama administration, and the only collusion that is verified is a Democratic National Committee and the Hillary campaign funneling money through to a British spy to get false information on Donald Trump to attempt to destroy the legitimacy of the 2016 election and to also spy on the Trump campaign by using that bogus information and selling it as intelligence to get a secret warrant. Trump lied about an affair. Let's talk integrity.
Yeah.
I'm ready. Democrats, you ready? No, well, you're not.
And in order to find the truth, they brought in a convicted liar.
Yeah.
By the way, the first ever in the history of Congress to be a convicted liar and actually be testifying at that point after being convicted of lying to Congress. That was pointed out today.
If you want to get in, we do have a line open. We'd love to hear from you. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Breaking news here in the last hour. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un signaled during an unprecedented question and answer session with reporters that he is ready to denuclearize, reaffirming a commitment long sought by the Trump administration and international community. If I'm not willing to do that, I won't be here right now, Kim said through an interpreter, prompting Trump to reply, "That is a good thing." And I think I have part of that audio right
okay.
here.
Here we go.
Here it is. Okay.
Here.
If I'm not willing to do that, I won't be here right now.
Good answer. Wow. That might be the best answer you've ever heard.
There's where we are. Who knows what that actually means?
Yeah. And no agreement, that coming across just in the last few minutes, no agreement reached. They've only agreed to have future meetings. So the talks are pretty much done, wrapping up sooner than expected, according to the Associated Press. We don't know if the president is going to speak to the media or not in the next hour or two. But if he does, we'll capture some of that and bring it to you. Because you can't, you're not going to be able to start any kind of, confirmation on that, which would be an inspection process without, and I talked to an expert on Wednesday morning about this, Jim Carafano from the Heritage Foundation And he made the very solid point, the first thing you have to do is take inventory, and that inventory has to be agreed on by both sides in terms of weapons.
And there was the NBC story that said the administration has given up that demand.
Right.
Well, if you've given up that demand, it doesn't matter if he says denuclearization.
Yeah.
If that NBC story is true and the president, right. From what I know, I mean, I don't know if the president has come out against that story here in the last hour or so.
Right.
But so far the White House did not respond to that as far as I know. And that story is about 24 hours old.
Yeah. And so if that is, you know, the case, then, well, there's zero progress. There, you know, the whole trust but verify. In this case, don't trust and verify.
Right.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara, along with Eric Harley.
This hour is sponsored by Freightliner. Run smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
So apparently the president is going to have some words coming up here in the next hour or so, right?
Well, it is believed what has happened there in Hanoi is there was supposed to be, a little over an hour ago, there was supposed to be a luncheon with the president and Kim Jong-un. Reporters, including our own Bob Costantino, who was in Hanoi via Twitter, saying that they're not certain that luncheon ever happened. No pictures came out of it. They're not sure if that happened. The talks have ended, and there is they were getting word that a press event with the president was going to be moved up a couple of hours. That was scheduled to happen right before 3 a.m. Central here stateside. So moving it up a couple hours would be any time now. And now we are seeing there from various sources that a number of reporters are there in that area where the press event is scheduled to happen. And if the president steps up, we will work to bring you as much of that as possible. But monitoring that there in Hanoi. They say the just reported about a half hour ago, no new agreement. So there was no signing like you had last time. There's not going to be a signing. And at this point, they've only agreed in principle to have future meetings. So we'll see where that goes, and we'll see if the president is going to speak. He's expected to anytime now.
And when you look at this, and we have said, look, these type of negotiations are simple. What you want in this is, number one, you need to take, if North Korea truly wants to denuclearize, and we doubt that they actually do, even though Kim Jong-un said, yes, he does. Denuclearization is the goal. And he said it, actually, they believe it was maybe the first time he ever answered a question to a foreign reporter. Let me play it here. We've got it here just so you can hear it through the interpreter. This was Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump. Here we go.
If I'm not willing to do that, I won't be here right now.
That's a good answer. Wow. That might be the best answer you've ever heard.
Yeah, if you're not willing to denuclearize, because are you willing to denuclearize? If I wasn't, I wouldn't be here right now.
Right.
So, again, you can say you can say all you want, but as we've talked about before, many times that when you have a treaty like this with the or when you have a agreement to denuclearize with a totalitarian power, what you need to do is get a complete and total inventory of everything. Yeah. And before you need the inventory, you need to verify the inventory with inspectors. And that means anything that your satellites tell you they have, you have to have access to. So you have to have inventory and then constant inspections over a period of years to ensure that everything is being destroyed. And then afterwards, you still need unfettered access to inspections of that country.
Yep, yep. Here's a statement via Bob Costantini, our Westwood One reporter. He's in Hanoi tweeting just 2 minutes ago, a statement by Sarah Huckabee Sanders, quote, President Donald J. Trump and Chairman Kim Jong-un had very good and constructive meetings. The two leaders discussed various ways to advance denuclearization and economic-driven concepts. No agreement was reached at this time, end quote. So that's from a statement coming from Sarah Huckabee right. Sanders a little while ago via our own Bob Costantini, who's in Hanoi. Without the verification, without inspections, it's handshakes and luncheons, frankly.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, and then beyond that, if you can't get to, if it's true, if the report is true that the U.S. is dropping the demand, you know, for verification for that part of the process, then I don't know what the point of the future meeting would be. Because you might reach a stalemate, but it doesn't mean you have to drop it.
Well, that question will be asked directly to the White House and the president. We'll see how he responds to that. Because right. Pompeo on Sunday said denuclearization
yes.
is the goal. Well, we all know you just don't say denuclearization and say, but we're not going to do full inspections, unfettered inspections, and unfettered inventory. We need to make sure we get into everything. You have to allow us to get, otherwise, there is no denuclearization. There is no guarantee of that. And that's what you want if you're going down road.
Right.
We said from the very beginning, I remember it was last May, I believe, was the last summit. And people were saying, well, you know, Trump had a deal before he ever went in there. And we said, no, he didn't. Remember that narrative?
Yeah.
So there wasn't a deal. There's never a deal. I got that from friends of mine. I said, guys, there was never a deal. We just had the discussion the other day. Right. Remember when you guys were on my case saying, Gary, you don't know there's a deal. I go, there was never a deal. Oh, okay, I guess you're right.
Well, and I said, the signing ceremony was all about, you know, just it was all for show.
Right. And so we understand the process, though. I'm not criticizing the president for trying it. We thought the president was very upfront when he said, look, I may come back a year from now and say, sorry, it's not working.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe he's going to say that today, as we are not a year from from that point. But, we're 9 months from that, you know, from that particular point. But let's put it this way. I believe Kim Jong-un is attempting to stall as long as he possibly can. What I don't want to see is this administration do what other administrations have done, is make concessions, give them aid, give him enough aid where you actually enable him to continue the program and keep his population, I'll say, more fed, and where you actually increase the strength of him and his ability to develop nuclear missiles by the agreements that you make, in order that you can win the symbolic, the symbolic and the imagery war of, okay, he's not shooting any missiles across Japan.
Right. Yeah. Because if you make those concessions with nothing in return, and something would be verification. Something would be that inventory process that we talk about. I think two significant things here. The fact that Kim Jong-un actually said something to an international reporter, unprecedented move, but really, I think on the downside, or on the side where you can see the zero progress like many expected, no signing ceremony. That is a Trump move. Because many presidents, you know, the last time, again, the signing ceremony really doesn't mean anything, but it shows the world you're still working. No signing ceremony here. I mean, the signing could be an agreement to have future meetings. Well, it doesn't have to mean anything, but that sounds like a Trump move saying, you know what, there's no need because we haven't made progress. And I think that's, hopefully that is a positive in that the U.S. isn't going to, you know, have any concessions in this case. So.
Well, look, in these negotiations, the greatest hope, and you and I have talked about this before, the greatest hope is the fact that you've got Pompeo there and you've got John Bolton as his national security advisor. Mm-hmm. To me, those are some of the biggest assets that the president has. That's actually why I have hope, because I do believe, and we've talked about the president, when we're talking about Cohen or whatever, not hiring the right people, I do believe with the John Bolton and Mike Pompeo, and I'll say this over and over again, he finally got it right, and he hired the right people there.
Yeah. We're going to go to a break and see if we can come back, and if the president is speaking, we'll bring you that audio, but we'll go to a break now. And then maybe have some more time on the other side for the president. If he is speaking, we'll bring that to you. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on DOT drug and alcohol testing. Your employer has requested that you submit a sample for a drug or alcohol test, but you fail to show up. If this happens, you are in violation of DOT regulations. Drivers must understand that refusing to take a drug or alcohol test is treated the same as a failed test. This means you will be immediately removed from your truck. Your employer will then advise you of the next steps in the process. Before you are eligible to drive again, you must take the following steps. You must be evaluated by a substance abuse professional, complete prescribed treatment and counseling, and pass a return-to-duty drug and/or alcohol test. And finally, drivers must take at least 6 follow-up tests in the coming year, but follow-up testing can last up to 5 years. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull. All right, we're back. We're not going to go to the network break just yet because we are getting word that the president is speaking right now in Hanoi.
It's coming to an end. It's been going on for a long time, decades and decades. There's a lot of dislike, unfortunately. So we've been in the middle trying to help them both out, see if we can get some organization and some peace. And I think probably that's going to be happening. We have Venezuela, as you know, has been very much in the news, and we're sending supplies. Supplies are getting through a little bit more. It's not easy. It's hard to believe somebody would say, let's not do it. What difference would that make, except it's great for his people to let it get through? But we're sending a lot of supplies down to Venezuela. People are starving to death. And you would really think that the man in charge currently would let those supplies get through. We are getting them into some of the cities and some of the areas that need them the most, and it's not an easy job. It's very difficult, actually. On North Korea, we just left Chairman Kim. We had a really, I think, a very productive time. We thought, and I thought, and Secretary Pompeo felt that it wasn't a good thing to be signing anything. I'm going to let Mike speak about it. But we literally just left. We spent pretty much all day with Kim Jong-un, who is he's quite a guy and quite a character. And I think our relationship is very strong. But at this time, we had some options. And at this time, we decided not to do any of the options. And we'll see where that goes. But it was a very interesting 2 days. And I think actually it was a very productive 2 days. But sometimes you have to walk. And this was just one of those times, and I'll let Mike speak to that for a couple of minutes, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. We had been working, our teams, the team that I brought to bear, as well as the North Koreans, for weeks to try and develop a path forward. So at the summit, we could make a big step along the way towards what the two leaders had agreed to back in Singapore in June of last year. We made real progress, and indeed we made even more progress when the two leaders met over the last 36 hours. Unfortunately, we didn't get all the way. We didn't get to something that ultimately made sense for the United States of America. I think Chairman Kim was hopeful that we would. We asked him to do more. He was unprepared to do that, but I'm still optimistic. I'm hopeful that the teams will get back together in the days and weeks ahead and continue to work out. It's a very complex problem. We have said since the beginning that this would take time. Our teams have gotten to know each other better. We know what the limits are. We know where some of the challenges are. And I think as we continue to work on this in the days and weeks ahead, we can make progress so that we can ultimately achieve what it is that the world wants, which is to denuclearize North Korea, to reduce risk for the American people and the people all around the world. I wish we could have gotten a little bit further, but I'm very optimistic that the progress that we made, both in the run-up to this summit as well as the progress that the two leaders made over these past 2 days, put us in position to get a really good outcome. The President and Chairman Kim both felt good that they had made that progress, but couldn't quite get along the line any further to make a deal that would have been bigger at this point. I hope we'll do so in the weeks ahead. Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you.
All right, Major, please.
Has this process been more difficult than you thought? And was the North Korean demand for lifting of some sanctions the real sticking point here in that you did not want to do that and they did? And
will it was about the sanctions.
Will there be a third summit, Mr. President?
Basically, they wanted the sanctions lifted in their entirety, and we couldn't do that. They were willing to denuke a large portion of the areas that we wanted, but we couldn't give up all of the sanctions for that. So we continue to work, and we'll see. But we had to walk away from that particular suggestion. We had to walk away from that.
Will all the sanctions that are currently in existence remain, sir?
They're in place. You know, I was watching, as a lot of you folks over the weeks have said, we've given up. We haven't given up anything. And frankly, I think we'll end up being very good friends with Chairman Kim and with North Korea, and I think they have tremendous potential. I've been telling everybody, they have tremendous potential, unbelievable potential, but we're going to see. But it was about sanctions. I mean, they wanted sanctions lifted, but they weren't willing to do an area that we wanted. They were willing to give us areas, but not the ones we wanted. John?
The President live in Hanoi right here on Red Eye Radio.
As we know, I mean, there's an incredibly complex set of issues that are at play here in terms of lifting the sanctions and what denuclearization is.
Right.
Did you get any distance toward sort of what Kim's vision of denuclearization is?
Yes, we did.
Because there is a lot of line of thinking that he wants to keep some nukes.
Yeah.
I mean, would you allow him to do that? And if you
I don't want to comment on that exactly, but he has a certain vision. And it's not exactly our vision, but it's a lot closer than it was a year ago. And I think, you know, eventually we'll get there. But for this particular visit, we decided that we had to walk, and we'll see what happens. Okay? Oh, look, we have a gentleman nobody's ever heard of that was Sean Hannity. What are you doing here, Sean Hannity? Should we let him do a question? I don't know. Yeah, John, go ahead.
Follow up with you. Yeah. So if he wants the sanctions completely off and you want more on denuclearization, how can you bridge that gap between now and the next time you might sit down together?
With time, it'll be bridged, I think, at a certain point. But there is a gap. We have to have sanctions, and he wants to denuke, but he wants to just do areas that are less important than the areas that we want. We know the country very well, believe it or not. We know every inch of that country, and we have to get what we have to get, because that's a big give. Yes, Sean, please.
I work in radio and TV. The mic's on. Mr. President, thank you. Mr. Secretary, good to see you. Mr. President, if you could elaborate a little bit more. We have some history. President Reagan walked away in Reykjavik. A lot of condemnation at the time, and it ended up working out very well in the end for the United States. Was this mostly your decision, what would message would you want to send Chairman Kim as he's listening to this press conference about the future and your relationship?
Well, Sean, I don't want to say it was my decision, because what purpose is that? I want to keep the relationship, and we will keep the relationship. We'll see what happens over the next period of time. But as you know, we got our hostages back. There's no more testing. And one of the things, importantly, that Chairman Kim promised me last night is, regardless, he's not going to do testing of rockets and nuclear. Not going to do testing. So, you know, I trust him, and I take him at his word. I hope that's true. But in the meantime, we'll be talking. Mike will be speaking with his people. He's also developed a very good relationship with the people, really the people representing North Korea. I haven't spoken to Prime Minister Abe yet. I haven't spoken to President Moon of South Korea. But we will, and we'll tell them it's a process and it's moving along, but we just felt it wasn't appropriate to sign an agreement today. We could have. I just felt it wasn't very appropriate. Yeah, Jonathan?
All right. Thank you so much. That's the president live in Hanoi, and we will get back to more of his comments a little bit later in the show. We'll follow that as they're doing a live press conference right now as we go to a break. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio. Like what they're saying, then you can't handle the truth. Red Eye Radio.
And I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
This hour for Freightliner, Run Smart, helping you run more efficiently, is Freightliner's number one goal. The president and the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, in Hanoi. And we're going to go back to the press conference happening right now. We rejoin that in progress.
Between Pyongyang and Washington.
I think China's been a big help, bigger than most people know. On the border, as you know, 93% of the goods coming into North Korea come through China. So there's a great power there. At the same time, I happen to believe that North Korea is calling its own shots. They're not taking orders from anybody. He's a very strong guy, and they're able to do things that are pretty amazing. But 93% still come in from China. China has an influence, and China's been a big help. And Russia's been a big help, too. As you know, there's a pretty small part of the border, but nevertheless significant, about 28 miles, and things can happen there too, and they've been a help. Yes, go ahead, please.
Thanks, President. Zhen Chen with Shenzhen Media Group of China. In your meeting with Chairman King this morning and yesterday, did the topic of China come up? If so, what can you share with us today? And you probably will have the end of Mar-a-Lago summit in March with Chinese President Xi Jinping. What would you like accomplished with your agenda regarding China at that time? Thank you.
We did talk about China today a lot. And he's getting along with China, and so are we. And we are, we're right now, you look at what's happened to our country. We've picked up trillions and trillions of dollars of net worth. Our stock market is almost at its all-time high. Our economy is incredible. Our unemployment numbers are among the best we've ever had in our history. Individual groups like African-American, women, you just take a look at any group, Hispanic, you saw that just came out, the best in history, African-American, best in history. So many different numbers are coming out so good. So we have the strongest economy, probably, possibly, that we've ever had. Fiat Chrysler just announced that they're going to spend $4.5 billion right next to Detroit in Michigan. They're building a tremendous plant. It's actually an expansion of another plant. It's going to double up their jobs and even more than that. A lot of great things are happening. And with China, they're having some difficulty, as you know. But I think that a lot of the difficulty is because of the tariffs that they're having. And in addition to that, we're putting a tremendous amount of money. You saw trade deficits went down last month. Everyone was trying to find out why. Well, we're taking in a lot of tariff money, and it's going right to the bottom line, and it has reduced the trade deficit. So we'll see what happens with China. I think we have a very good chance. Their numbers are down, but I don't want that. I want them to do great. But we've been losing anywhere from $300 to $500 billion a year with China for many, many years. And again, like other things, many presidents should have done this before me, and nobody did. So we're doing it. Go ahead, please. Right here, this gentleman.
Chad O'Carroll from NK News, specialist North Korea News. Good. What's your message for President Moon, who has effectively reached the glass ceiling as far as inter-Korean cooperation is concerned due to sanctions? And what's next for U.S. ROK military drills?
Well, I like President Moon very much. We have a great relationship. Believe it or not, I have a great relationship with almost every leader. A lot of people find that hard to understand, but I do. But some take advantage of our country like you wouldn't believe. And when they know I know it, which I know in every case, maybe it sort of freezes them up a little bit. But we do. We have a lot of good relationships. We'll be calling President Moon very soon, as soon as I get by the phone on the plane, and he'll be one of the first calls. I'll be calling Prime Minister Abe of Japan, telling him about where we are and what we're doing. But I'll be making those calls. No, he's working very hard. President Moon is working very hard. He'd love to see a deal. And he's been very helpful. Okay? Thank you. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm Yang Sheng, reporter from Global Times China. I would like to ask you that what are you expecting China to do in the next step to mediate your relationship with North Korea? Thank you.
To use China?
Yeah,
from China. Well, we do. I mean, China's been very helpful. President Xi is a great leader. He's a highly respected leader all over the world, and especially in Asia. And he's helped us, Mike, I would say he's helped us a lot, right?
Yes,
I actually called him just recently to say, hey, you know, whatever you can do on this. But he has been very helpful at the border, and he's been very, very helpful with, I think, North Korea generally. Could he be a little more helpful? Probably. But he's been excellent. Go ahead, please. No, yeah, please.
Sorry. Maybe Allie next.
That's okay. Your friends.
Thanks, Mr. President. Did you commit with Chairman Kim to a next summit during your term?
Haven't. No.
Okay.
We'll see if it happens. It happens. I have not committed.
They are at this point, some would say, a nuclear power. Do you accept North Korea as a nuclear armed state, at least for the time being? And are you thinking about reimposing the military exercises with South Korea, or yeah. Will you keep in a freeze?
Well,
for
you know,
freeze?
The military exercises. I gave that up quite a while ago because it costs us $100 million every time we do it. We fly these massive bombers in from Guam. And when I first started, a certain general said, oh, yes, sir, we fly them in from Guam. It's right next door. Well, right next door is 7 hours away. And then they come and they drop millions of dollars of bombs, and then they go back. But we would spend... I mean, we spent hundreds of millions of dollars on those exercises, and I hated to see it. I thought it was unfair, and frankly, I was sort of the opinion that South Korea should help us with that. You know, we're protecting South Korea. I think they should help us with that. So those exercises are very expensive, and I was telling the generals, I said, look, you know, exercising is fun, and it's nice, and they play the war games, and I'm not saying it's not necessary, because at some levels it is, but at other levels it's not. But it's a very, very expensive thing. And, you know, we do have to think about that, too. But when they spend hundreds of millions of dollars on those exercises and we don't get reimbursed, we're spending a tremendous amount of money on many countries, protecting countries that are very rich, that can certainly afford to pay us, and then some. And those countries, by the way, and those countries know that it's not right, but nobody's ever asked them before, but I've asked them, and we're gaining a lot of money. We've picked up over $100 billion just in NATO over the last 2 years. $100 billion more has come in, and we're doing that with a lot of countries. You'll be seeing that a lot. Yes, sir, please.
President Trump live in Hanoi.
One second, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. You have a personal relationship, and I believe Vice President Pence does, with the family of Otto Warmbier. I'm wondering, you've talked about this week's about Kim Jong-un being my friend. You called him on Twitter. You said you have a great relationship. Have you in Singapore or here confronted Kim Jong-un about Otto Warmbier's death?
I have.
Asked him to take responsibility.
Yeah.
And what did he say to you, and why do you call him your friend?
I have talked about it, and I really don't think it was in his interest at all. I know the Warmbier family very well. I think they're an incredible family. What happened is horrible. I really believe something very bad happened to him, and I don't think that the top leadership knew about it, and when they had to send him home. By the way, I got the prisoners back. I got the hostages back. And Otto was one of the hostages, but Otto came back in shape that was not even to be talked about. I thought it was horrible. Now, the others came back extremely healthy, but Otto came back in a condition that was just terrible. And I did speak about it, and I don't believe that he would have allowed that to happen. It just wasn't to his advantage to allow that to happen. Those prisons are rough. They're rough places, and bad things happened. But I really don't believe that he was I don't believe he knew about it.
Did he tell you that he did not – did Kim Jong-un tell you?
He felt badly about it. I did speak to him. He felt very badly. But he knew the case very well, but he knew it later. And, you know, you got a lot of people, a big country, a lot of people. And in those prisons and those camps, you have a lot of people. And some really bad things happened to Otto. Some really, really bad things.
Why are you
But
to
he
call
tells
him?
Me, he tells me that he didn't know about it, and I will take him at his word. Ma'am, go ahead, please. Please, go ahead in the back. No, in the back, behind you. Thank you.
Mr. President, Schwarzman Valentina, Sputnik News Agency. Have you discussed the issue of possible inspections to North Korea nuclear sites during your negotiations?
You're going to have to speak a little louder. And mm-hmm. Where are you from?
Russia, Sputnik News Agency. Okay. Have you discussed the issue of possible inspections to North Korea's nuclear sites during your talks with the chairman?
Why don't you answer that, Mike? Good.
Inspections
I was
nuclear
about
sites.
Sure.
International
inspections,
yes.
Inspections on North Korea?
Yeah, inspections
We'd be able to do that very easily. We have that set up, so we would be able to do that very easily. The inspections on North Korea will take place and will, if we do something with them, we have a schedule set up that is very good. We know things that, as David was asking about certain places and certain sites, there are sites that people don't know about that we know about. We would be able to do inspections, we think, very, very successfully. Yes, ma'am, please. Yes, go ahead, please. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. President.
A lot of people here, by the way. A big group of people.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Khan News Israel, Mr.
Good.
President.
Good.
Following this engagement with North Korea, you're trying to bring peace to the Middle East.
Right.
The peace plan is about to be introduced in the near future, and as you have mentioned before...
Well, we hope. We're working hard on the peace plan, and we hope it will
I
be
I believe
produced.
You do. But as you mentioned before, it will require Israel to make compromises to the Palestinians. As far as you know, is Prime Minister Netanyahu willing to make these compromises, which are very much needed? And a second question, Mr. Netanyahu is about to be indicted today with corruption allegations. Do you wish to tell him something on this occasion?
Well, I just think he's been a great prime minister. And I don't know about his difficulty, but you're telling me something that, you know, people have been hearing about, but I don't know about that. I can say this, that he's done a great job as prime minister. He's tough, he's smart, he's strong. He is very defensive. His military has been built up a lot. They buy a lot of equipment from the United States, and they pay for it. Of course, we give them tremendous, as you know, subsidy also. $4 billion is a lot each year. They've been very, very good. They've been incredible, actually, in many ways. But there is a chance for peace between Israel and the Palestinians. And, you know, it's interesting. All my life, I've heard that the toughest of all deals, when they talk about tough deals, we all like deals, but the toughest of all deals would be peace between Israel and the Palestinians.
There you go. The president talking in Hanoi, the press conference continuing this morning as he and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo are there answering questions for international media from all over.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. The president just finishing up his press conference in Hanoi with the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo. And we will have some of the audio that you might have missed
right
here during our breaks here. He was asked about collusion and Cohen. So we will get to those statements, in fact. And I will say this. I thought the president's tone was really, really good.
I thought so, too. He looked very tired. His eyes looked very, very sleepy. You know, stateside, again, it's very late in the night. And he mentioned that when he was in Singapore last year for the first summit, that he had been awake for that trip at the point that he did his press conference, his single press conference after the signing ceremony. He said he had been awake for more than 24 hours. There's no doubt. Lots of jet lag going on there, but hopefully he'll get some rest on the plane going back. Air Force One set to take off in just a little while and get the president back home.
No deal, and the president said it was over sanctions. Apparently North Korea wants him to drop the sanctions before they'll agree to anything, and it was like no. And the president was asked, how long will this take, to come to an agreement? He said, well, it could be a very short time or a very, very long time. I think the president is now putting this actually into perspective. We had talked last year about how optimistic it was. You and I remember people calling the show saying, well, he's got a deal. This incredibly got a deal so quickly. And we said, no, there is no deal. And we won't know, even when there is a deal, for a couple of years, whether the North Koreans were actually following it or not. So,
as we suspected, it was the president and Mike Pompeo together, according to the president during the press conference, that they made the decision that there's really nothing to sign here, because there isn't, even symbolically. But I think that in and of itself, calling off the signing ceremony, shows that, all right, really, we met, we shook hands again, we talked, and let's not oversell it this time, and we'll see what happens next time.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Thank you so much for being here. Well, the president just finishing up his press conference, seemed to go around 45 minutes or so. In Vietnam, the North Korean talks. And the White House had said earlier that the president and Kim would sign a joint ceremony agreement at a ceremony Thursday afternoon. That event was canceled. The lunch was canceled. The president came out with Mike Pompeo. They were in good spirits. And the president just said, we couldn't come to a deal. We knew we weren't going to come to a deal Kim Jong-un wasn't ready, he said, to go where they wanted to go. And so they decided to break it up and talk later. No hard feelings. The president clearly has indicated that this could be a long, long process. The president said that the sanctions issue was the deal breaker. Said that North Korea wanted the sanctions lifted entirely. Said that Kim was willing to denuclearize large portions of areas that we wanted, but not other areas that we wanted. And so his statement was, sometimes you just have to walk. We'll have more audio coming up. We carried the majority of the press conference, but not all of it, and parts of it you missed that we want to make sure that you get to hear. This part of the press conference was where a reporter asked the president about the Cohen hearings yesterday on Capitol Hill.
Former lawyer Michael Cohen, who worked for you for 10 years, his office right next to yours, by yours at Trump Tower, he called you a liar, a con man, a racist. What's your response to Michael Cohen?
Well, it's incorrect. And, you know, it's very interesting because I tried to watch as much as I could. I wasn't able to watch too much because I've been a little bit busy. But I think having a fake hearing like that and having it in the middle of this very important summit is really a terrible thing. They could have made it 2 days later or next week, and it would have been even better. They would have had more time. But having it during this very important summit is sort of incredible. And he lied a lot, but it was very interesting because he didn't lie about one thing. He said, no collusion with the Russian hoax. And I said, I wonder why he didn't just lie about that, too, like he did about everything else. I mean, he lied about so many different things. And I was actually impressed that he didn't say, well, I think there was collusion for this reason or that. He didn't say that. He said no collusion. And I was, you know, a little impressed by that, frankly. He could have gone all out. He only won about 95% instead of 100%. But the fact is there is no collusion. And I call it the witch hunt. This should never happen to another president. This is so bad for our country. So bad. You look at this whole hoax. I call it the Russian witch hunt. I now add the word hoax. It's a very, very bad thing for our country. But I was impressed with the fact that he, because the most important question up there was the one on collusion, and he said he saw no collusion. So we'll see what happens. But it was pretty shameful, I think. Yes, ma'am, please.
President Trump.
Go ahead. How about one of you instead of three?
Well, actually, I do have the microphone, I guess, so...
Excuse me. Person in the front. Go ahead. No. Not you. Excuse me. Yeah, we'll get to you. Thank you.
Thank you, President Trump. Jane Tan with China News and Guangdong Television. What was the atmosphere like when you walk away from the negotiation table?
I think it was very good, very friendly. This wasn't a walk away like you get up and walk out. No, this was very friendly. We shook hands. There's a warmth that we have. Now, I hope that stays. I think it will. But we're positioned to do something very special. This has been going on for many decades. This isn't me. You know, this should have been solved during many presidential runs. And, you know, people talked about it. They never did anything. I get a kick out of so many people from past administrations telling me how to negotiate when they were there. In some cases, for 8 years, they did nothing. But I think the relationship was very warm, and when we walked away, it was a very friendly walk. Mike, you might want to speak to that for a second.
No, I agree. I talked with my counterparts as well. Look, we hope we do more, but everyone's very focused on how we continue to build on this. We are certainly closer today than we were 36 hours ago, and we were closer then than we were a month or two before that. So real progress was made. I think everyone had hoped we could do just a little bit better, but the departure was with an agreement that we would continue to work on what has been an incredibly difficult problem. Both sides are resolved to achieve it, and everyone walked away in that spirit.
And may I add, you and Chairman Kim are from very different political systems. You are from different generations. And
It's a very different system, I would say that's true.
How do you find you guys in common? Because we saw the atmosphere.
We just like each other. I mean, we have a good relationship. It's a totally different system, to put it mildly. But we like each other, good relationship.
So there you go. That's just one of the audio cuts that you didn't get to hear last hour. We have more coming up here in just a couple of moments. But, you know, one thing that I want to say about this, and number one, I like the tone of the president. Number two, I like the fact that he didn't oversell it. They didn't attempt to oversell it. I believe last year they tried to oversell what they actually had accomplished, which was, you know, nothing when it comes to the substance of denuclearization. I think they were pretty up. It seemed like they were pretty upfront. Look, we couldn't get a deal. Here's why. He wants this. We're not going to give him this. They didn't get complete denuclearization. I'm still not clear. You know, we saw the NBC report out that said that they have dropped that they don't. They are dropping the fact that they want complete denuclearization or complete inspections. They didn't really address that in the press conference at all. That was at NBC Report. I'm sure the White House will respond to that because I'm sure they will be questioned on that in the near future. But as you and I have said for the longest time, it is. And by the way, you're going to hear it again that the president speaks highly of the president of China, of Kim Jong-un.
that's what you do when you do international negotiations. You don't insult the people that you're dealing with. One of the things, and you and I have talked about this, about President Obama, and this really came out from, this was Chris Matthews that said it on MSNBC. He actually said it first. He said, look, about Obama, this guy doesn't like meeting with people. He doesn't like negotiating. He doesn't like, he just wants things to just happen and go. He didn't even like meeting with the members of his own party, the leadership of his own party. He just get the thing done.
Right.
And when it came to international leaders, he really didn't like to get into the negotiations of doing that. If you're going to do that, if you're going to get involved and try to do great things, most of the time you're not going to succeed. Most of the time you may get 50% of what you want. But the fact is, when you start dealing with international leaders, it does you no good to insult them. And, you know, you and I were talking about when he was talking about some of the hostages, you know, that were eventually released from North Korea. And you and I were listening and saying, all right, Mr. President, wrap this question up and move on to the next one.
Right.
Because yeah. there is times that you get into an uncomfortable position. But it is all part of the negotiations. You don't publicly insult the leaders that you are attempting to negotiate something with. It's that simple.
Right. And I think in that setting, really, there's no other way around it. I think the loudest message came from the fact that no new agreement or deal was reached. And I think that is I think that really says a lot about where they have come politically, what the message is the president's trying to send, the administration's trying to send to the American people, and I guess the world, and Kim Jong-un, since Singapore. What do you, what do you actually expect to get done? What was funny is there was a reporter from the Washington Post who tweeted on yesterday morning, something about a quote from the president. He retweeted, in fact, a tweet from the president talking about, this is a great meeting and the whole thing, and the reporter tweeted something to the effect of, this doesn't sound like the product of a guy who's willing to walk away from the table. And of course, now we know the president and Mike Pompeo decided, time to walk away from the table. No new deal. We're not going to have a signing. We'll meet in the future. And the point being is that there may have been, based on Singapore, possibly, there may have been this expectation that there was going to be a lot of overselling something when there is no actual progress. Because when you're at this stage, really, the only thing you can, the first one is handshakes and lots of pomp and circumstance and everything else. But beyond that, you're going to have to start showing something. I mean, the international community is going to ask you, when do you start inspecting?
Well, and I'll say this, by canceling the lunch, what it was saying was, look, why have the lunch? If we're not going to get anywhere, we're at the standstill. Let's move on.
Right.
They can discuss that. Let's not pretend that we're getting somewhere. Because there was a message. Somebody had to say, no, we're going to cancel the lunch. We're not going to do it.
Right.
They could have kept it up and said, oh, we're still going to just, be friendly and show the world that we're still friendly together. And somebody said no to that. And I'm going to guess it was probably the United States saying, nope, not going to do it.
Right. And I think the president alluded to that was the decision ultimately of his decision, and along with Mike Pompeo, that they would end it and no deal would be reached, and they'll come back to the table later.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90 Red Eye. Well, the president and Kim Jong-un wrapping up their second summit, calling it 2.0, the president having a press conference last hour. There were portions of it that we missed, and we want to make sure that we play for you here. Here was the president when he was asked the question about whether it was a good time to sign a deal, why it wasn't a good time to sign a deal with North Korea.
If you think of it, you have on one side Russia and China, and on the other you have South Korea, and you're surrounded by water, and among the most beautiful shorelines in the world, there's tremendous potential in North Korea, and I think he's going to lead it to a very important thing economically. I think it's going to be an absolute economic power. Yes, go ahead, please. Go ahead, yeah.
President David Sanger from the New York Times.
I know, David.
6 months ago when you spoke, or 8 months ago in Singapore, you said if you didn't have something in 6 months, we should come back and ask you about it. In that time, you have seen Chairman Kim increase the number of missiles he's produced and continue to produce more nuclear material. And that's been a pressure point on you because he's showing that the arsenal is getting larger while this is going on.
Well, some people, David, are saying that, and some people are denying that. They have shots from above, way above, and some people are saying that, and some people aren't. But I could have taken that out today, but I think you and others would have said we didn't get enough for what we'd be giving up. So, and I, you know, don't forget, we're partners with a lot of countries on this, if you think about it, with the sanctions. We have a whole big partnership with the United Nations and many countries, including Russia, China, and others. And then, of course, South Korea is very important to this whole thing. And Japan, I don't want to do something that is going to violate the trust that we've built up. We have a very strong partnership.
So can you just give us a little more detail? Did you get into the question of actually dismantling the Yongbyon complex?
Yes, absolutely.
And does he seem willing ultimately
totally.
To take all of that out?
Sure, totally.
He does. He just wants all the sanctions off first.
He would do that, but he wants the sanctions for that. And as you know, there's plenty left after that.
And
I just felt it wasn't good. Mike and I spent a long time negotiating and talking about it to ourselves. And just I felt that that particular, as you know, that facility, while very big, it wasn't enough to do what we were doing.
So he was willing to do Yongbyon, but you wanted more than that, I assume.
We had to have more than that, yeah. We had to have more than that. Because there are other things that you haven't talked about, that you haven't written about, that we found, and we have to have. That was done a long time ago, but the people didn't know about.
Including the uranium, including the second uranium enrichment plant.
Exactly. And we brought many, many points up that I think they were surprised that we knew. But we had to do more than just the one level, because if we did the one level and we gave up all of that leverage, it's been taking a long time to build.
So he
and
was,
I want to take,
he was
by
not
the way,
willing just, to take out that second. That
David,
second.
I want to take off the sanctions so badly because I want that country to grow. That country has got such potential, but they have to give up more. We could have done that deal. Mike, you want to speak to that?
Only, David, there are also timing and sequencing issues that were associated with that as well, which we didn't quite get across the finish line as well. But remember, too, even that facility, even the Yongbyon facility and all of its scope, which is important for sure, still leaves missiles, still leaves warheads and weapon systems. So there's a lot of other elements that we just couldn't get to.
And the listing of all of them. Which
yes, sir, and a declaration associated. All of those things we couldn't quite get there today.
That's right. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you.
I just wanted to clarify, when you talk about what you would be willing to give up all of the sanctions for, right, are you still thinking that you want North Korea to give up everything to do complete, verifiable
denuclearization? Well, I don't want to say that
before
you
lift sanctions?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't want to say that to you because I don't want to put myself in that position from the standpoint of negotiation. But, you know, we want a lot to be given up. And we're giving up. And we'll have to, you know, we'll be helping them along economically, us and other many other countries.
That's the president from last hour, the press conference in Vietnam with Kim Jong-un. It has ended. There is no deal. Sometimes, look, I think the president overall, I love the fact that they didn't oversell, as I believe they did last year. And we called them on and said, look, don't oversell this thing. There is no great deal here. There is no deal to denuclearization. And I thought this time they were much more upfront with the world on this about the challenges that they have. Sometimes the president just gets on a narrative and just will not let it go. I mean, day in and day out when he talks about North Korea being an economic power and the unlimited potential of the economic power of North Vietnam, as if that's where Kim Jong-un wants to go to.
Well, which, of course, he doesn't, because he doesn't. The last thing he would want would be a vibrant economy where people were making a lot of money and therefore got political power, because then he's dead.
And it doesn't serve our allies, certainly of South Korea, if you're overselling something, if it's this big, you know, promise to the world and you're making a lot right. out of, you know, clearly no progress just yet. And it also is, I think, sends a very long message. Or a very big message and strong message to Kim Jong-un that, yeah, no, we're not there yet. And we're not going to, you know, because you mentioned earlier before we heard from the president, but clearly they recognize the problems that were created over the years with past administrations and too many concessions along the way.
Right.
Which that's right. something, at least for now, that the Secretary of State and the president are not willing to do and don't have to do. So the pressure is still on Kim Jong-un. 866-90-RED-EYE, here's your forecast.
In the west, widespread heavy precipitation across central to northern California will continue most of the day. Lower elevation heavy rains, potential flooding possible across central to northern California, while very heavy snow measured in feet is likely through the Sierra and Southern Cascades. Heavy snows through portions of the northern Rockies from northwest Wyoming into central to far eastern Idaho could affect travel, with portions of I-94, I-90, I-15 north and south, and I-25 in Wyoming and Montana all affected. In the mid-Mississippi Valley, we'll see rain down through the Gulf Coast into the southeast. That wet weather expected along I-10, I-20, I-85, I-65, and I-75 out of Atlanta today. Watch for icing along I-44 from Oklahoma City to St. Louis. There's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. We'll have more from the president's press conference from Vietnam concerning North Korea. I'm still 40 years ago.
Exposing BS Nightly. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Good morning. Thanks for being here. The president and Kim Jong-un wrapping up the summit early, abruptly, canceling the lunch. No deal. The president saying, sorry, what Kim Jong-un wanted, I'll put it this way. Kim Jong-un was not ready to make the compromises that the United States wanted them to make. There was no anger. Mm-hmm. They said they left on friendly terms. There was just no reason to continue it because he wasn't ready to move as far as they were willing to move. And, of course, it was on sanctions. Kim Jong-un, according to the president, wanted all the sanctions lifted, yet would not give them what they wanted when it came to probably inventorying first everything that they had and then what actually you wanted to denuclearize.
Yeah. The president basically saying that they wanted North Korea wanting those sanctions gone first. And so that's the trouble we've gotten into with previous administrations right. where you give them what they want first, then all of a sudden you don't get what you want in return.
And one more audio cut that we want to play that we didn't get to play last hour. And this is, I think this is the wrap up the press conference. One of the last questions, I believe, from a reporter from China asking the president about the future of North Korea.
Mr. President, I'm from China. My question is, do you still believe it is possible that the North Korea and U.S. relation could be like the U.S. and the Vietnam relation in the future?
You have to go again?
Do you still believe that it is possible the relation between U.S. and North Korea in the future could be like the relation between U.S. and Vietnam?
Yeah, I think we're going to have, we have very, very good relations. And by the way, speaking of, you mentioned Japan, we have a lot of good things happening with Japan. We have trade talks started. For years, Japan has been sending millions and millions of cars in, and as you know, it's not been a very fair situation for the United States. We're starting trade talks with Japan. They actually started about 3 months ago, and I think we'll have a very good deal for the United States. But that's been a very unfair situation. Prime Minister Abe understands that, and that's fine. Yes, sir, please, back there.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm Chin Yi Chang with Shanghai Media Group. Do you think the next meeting could be soon or might take some time?
Well, I can't tell you. I mean, it might be soon. It might not be for a long time. I can't tell you. I would hope it would be soon, but it may not be for a long time. I could have done a deal today, but it would have been a deal that wouldn't have been a deal that would have been something that I wouldn't have been happy about. Mike would not have been happy about. We had some pretty big options, but we just felt it wasn't appropriate, and we really want to do it right. Yes, in the back. Yes, ma'am, please.
Debbie Edward, ITV News. At which point did it become clear to you that you wouldn't be getting a deal here in Hanoi? The language from yourself and Kim Jong-un was very positive last night and even this morning, and therefore was it a mistake to come
here?
No,
I think
here?
The language was good all throughout. The language has been good even now, but I don't go by language because we had probably the toughest language in the history of diplomacy, if you call it diplomacy, at the beginning, and yet we became very friendly. I don't believe there was any tougher language ever than that. But again, this was something that should have been handled by other presidents long before me. And long before they had the kind of power that they have. But it wasn't. It should have been done by many. I'm not just blaming the Obama administration, which, by the way, it did nothing, nothing, absolutely nothing on North Korea. It allowed things that happened and to happen that were very inappropriate. But I'm not blaming the Obama administration. I'm blaming many administrations. Something should have happened. But I don't think the rhetoric's been bad at all. Initially, it was horrible, but now it's been very good. All right, one more. How about you? Go ahead, please. Please, go ahead. Go ahead.
Channel 8, Dongayebo, South Korean media outlet here. I'd like to ask you, you said that we do not particularly know when they will be, North Korean leader will be willing to come to the table and take the actions that's been required. If that's the case, would the U.S. be willing to strengthen the sanctions and perhaps put the pressure on North Korea to move forward?
I don't want
to
comment on that. I can just tell you this, that we have very strong sanctions. I don't want to talk about increasing sanctions. They're strong. They have a lot of great people in North Korea that have to live also, and that's important to me. And I would say this, my whole attitude changed a lot because I got to know, as you know, Chairman Kim very well, and they have a point of view also. So I don't want to really talk about that. I just think that hopefully for the sake of South Korea, for the sake of Japan, and frankly for the sake of China, I was talking to President Xi, who really is a man that gets the respect of a lot of people. I say you can't love having a nuclear state right next to China. And he doesn't. He really doesn't. He would like to see that problem solved, too. So that's it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm about to get on a plane and fly back to a wonderful place called Washington, D.C. So thank you very much.
So there's the president wrapping it up, and you can see Air Force One there.
Yeah, I was following here via Circa. They are on they're periscoping live on the tarmac. That what you just heard was a little less than an hour ago, but now the president and all officials are on board Air Force One on the tarmac. The red carpet has been rolled up. And all the dignitaries are now back away from the plane, and Air Force One set to take off here in just a few minutes. The president will be stateside and basically shutting it down early. I mean, shutting down because they reached that stalemate, and you don't have to concede anything. They know that. I think it was a interesting to have the Secretary of State there at the press conference, knowing that he would be there in Hanoi. Because it's a reminder that you know, they know what they need to expect from Kim Jong-un, and they need to send that message, that clear message to him during that process. And keep in mind, Kim Jong-un and Mike Pompeo sat down together at least a couple of times that we know of, alone. And so I think that, you know, brings a different tone to it. And as you mentioned, Gary, and I agree with you, the president had a good tone during this press conference that lasted less than an hour, about 40 minutes or so.
I think with what was going on back here in the United States with the Michael Cohen hearings, this is a president that is a lot more restrained than he used to be. Mm-hmm. A lot less excitable. And a lot less the imagery of being manic at times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's going about it the right way. Look, you and I, for anybody who expected great things out of North Korea soon, you were in a dream world. It wasn't going to happen. We said it last year. I remember sitting here last year, you know, roughly 9 months ago, and people were saying, oh, they signed the deal. They got the deal done. There's a deal. Deep nuclear. And we said, there is no deal. Stop it. We won't know for a couple of years where this is actually headed. Kim Jong-un does not want to give up anything unless he gets guarantees of him being able to remain in power.
Right.
I mean, that's what you're dealing with here. And so, in a way, you look at the president, and I'm sure being advised by Mike Pompeo, John Bolton, and others, that they understand what North Korea is. Mike Pompeo and Bolton, who is the president's chief national security advisor, they tell the president exactly what North Korea is. They're not fooled by North Korea. You're going to hear a lot of that today. Oh, the president talking about being friendly. He's being conned by Kim Jong-un. I don't believe he is. I do believe last year they oversold what was going on. And this year, it seemed like there was an extreme effort not to oversell it and just say, look, this could be an extremely long time. But in the meantime, there are no international tensions because he's not shooting missiles over Japan.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the message has been made clear to him twice. And we have met face to face. And I'm sure the message has been made clear, even if it's done in the nicest ways, which are don't screw with us.
Yeah. And you have to wonder what the play is here with the Kim Jong-un going forward. And they said, you know, they agreed essentially in principle to meet in the future. But if you also look at the President Moon of South Korea and those meetings that have taken place, and also the meeting between the Chinese officials and Kim Jong-un, I have to believe in the back of my mind, basically all the players here that aren't Kim Jong-un are saying, keep the guy busy. In other words, don't let him go back to North Korea and just steep, because if he's, I mean, clearly this was not a good day for him. The U.S. really isn't hurt by no deal in this situation. Nothing has changed about North Korea from our perspective. For him, it's going to be a continuation of those sanctions, which are not just coming from the U.S., but many of our partners and allies. So I'm wondering if there's going to be any kind of movement or anything said, or Kim Jong-un would do anything outside of, even do another missile test or announce that there might be a missile test. Of course, that sets you back to, you know, zero if you're not already there to begin with.
And what of the experts in body language and, you know, you've got the experts at the FBI, and I'm sure the CIA, that do a personality makeup.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you love to see that top secret report on Kim Jong-un?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting.
How have they analyzed him? How have they told the president, this is, if you want to accomplish something, here's what you have to do? Look, obviously the president's going overboard in complimenting him, calling him friend, great guy, everything else. There's a reason they're doing that.
Yeah, right, right.
Because the president just doesn't throw out compliments that everybody is a great guy.
Yeah. And you know, you look at the logistics of this, and obviously we have the means and the capability to take our president to go anywhere, right, in the world and be secure, relatively speaking, very secure. But you look at the logistics of a meeting like this over a period of days. You know, the Secret Service travels days ahead of the president. They inspect the kitchen. They're in the kitchen anytime any meal is prepared. They oversee that entire process with eyes on the process at all levels. They bring the president's water, condiments, and other things. Kim Jong-un and North Korean officials, it was reported last year in Singapore, didn't touch anything on their plate. It's a lack of trust. If you're Kim Jong-un,
right,
you are paranoid at every single
right
level. And so the logistics of this whole thing are very interesting. But when you get down to it, nothing has changed about a Kim Jong-un. I'm just wondering if something will be different after this meeting, having no agreement in place, and he's still under tough sanctions.
Looks like the plane's headed out to the runway.
And, yes. You know, yeah, we'll be in the air here shortly.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So we played all the audio cuts at the president. We played the entire press conference, let's put it that way. It may have been broken up into different pieces, but you've heard over the last hour and a half the yeah entire press conference
right
from Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
There is no deal. The United States walked away early, said, nope, we're done. They still said extremely friendly with Kim Jong-un. It's just they wanted the sanctions lifted. That's not going to happen because we can't get what we want at this point. He wasn't ready, but everybody was still happy. There seemed to be no anger whatsoever. No anger about it whatsoever. They didn't. The president and Mike Pompeo did not oversell to the world what was accomplished or what wasn't accomplished. And I believe it was a good thing. And he said, look, it could take a short time. It could take a very, very, very long time. But we're going to get what we want here. And I think that probably it's a message that for most people in the United States will be taken in a good way, which is, okay, good. If we can't get what you want, president said, and I chuckled a little bit, the president said, well, we could have got a deal. It just wouldn't have been the deal we wanted.
Right.
It's like, well, yeah, you could have said, we're just going to take off sanctions completely and build your nukes.
Right.
And you could sign a deal for that.
Mm, yeah.
Well, that wasn't going to happen.
Or you could do what past administrations have done and say, yeah, okay, we'll lift the sanctions, and we really hope you're being honest with
us. Yes, exactly.
And that wasn't going to happen. When they talk about body language, you look at the face of a Mike Pompeo, and he's all business, very serious, all business, but you know you're getting it straight from him, which I think is why the president had him up there on the stage during that press conference.
If you missed it, we'll have more audio coming up here next hour.
And the president right now is on his way back to the U.S. Air Force One is in the air.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.